Hi, I'm Danny.
And I'm Gabby.
And this is Clashes, a podcast exploring culture shock in all its chaotic forms.
We know a good shock can shake things up.
So we blew up our lives and crash-landed in Paris.
With a delusional sense of hope.
And a dangerous red habit.
I feel attacked. But culture shock isn't just about changing countries.
Almost. It's about embracing the unknown.
From navigating friendships in your 30s.
Awkward. To processing pop culture's oddest obsessions.
So buckle up and embrace the chaos.
One clash at a time.
Right on the magic school bus. Every time. Welcome back.
Hello. Another jingle.
Another jingle for you all.
Did you record that?
We've gotten some... What do you mean?
Your little song?
What, my little song? From Magic School Bus.
Yeah, but did you just... Was that
Oh,
on?
Yeah, that was
okay,
on.
Great.
Mike was on. Mike
okay,
was live.
Great. Great start.
We've been getting some really, really amazing feedback on our on our Snack and Spiral.
I personally hate it, but I'm glad that everybody's loving it.
It truly sounds like we're not in a good situation. Anyways, everyone come back. Welcome back to episode...
Five.
Cinque? No.
Yeah, five.
How do you say it in Spanish?
Cinco.
Cinco. I did the Italian way.
Cinco, yeah.
Today, we are going to talk about restaurants, but before that... We'll do a little food
current
gossip.
Events. What's going on?
A little food goss.
Yeah. So I wrote this down. I'm not sure what's going on, so I wanted you to tell me a little more. But
I'm also not, once again, true to Danny and Gabby, classic form is we love to talk about things. We have literally no idea what we're talking about. The whole like Wishbone Kitchen, Bon Appetit drama has been so fascinating to follow, especially because I work in food PR. So I
can
feel
you
like
just like top line, like
top line. Yeah.
What happened?
Basically, Meredith, Wishbone Kitchen, had a series called Dinner with Friends. Okay. And it was like her giving recipe advice to have like for
how
having
to host.
Hosting and dinner parties. Exactly. And Bon Appetit, the publication, launched a series called Dinner with Friends.
And it's like similar branding, similar colors.
I guess it's a similar colors.
And
like
same
pink
name.
And, pink and red. Not revolutionary, but like same name.
Okay.
Same colors. So I get that it's frustrating.
She called them out. So she was like, why are you copying me?
She called them out on Instagram and TikTok. She like did like, I think like double post. She like was like, I'm very angry. There's way too many similarities. I think she's annoyed because obviously she has a brand. She has like, you know.
And they're much bigger than her. Yeah.
They're much, I mean, it's, you know it's, what though? This is what I feel mixed feelings on.
Okay. Because you think she's bigger.
I think she's more relevant.
I
think Bon App is amazing. I love a lot of people who work at Bon App, and I think they're great, but I think Bon App's had a lot of ups and downs. They've also laid off a lot of incredible people or pushed out of a lot of incredible people.
Media in New
and,
York.
Yeah, exactly. And I think Meredith is kind of the next wave of food. I think she's kind of the modern Ina, which is a bold thing to say because you know how much I love Ina.
Yeah,
I have an Ina wig at home. I like to Ina role play in my free time. And I just kind of think she... So that's where there was a lot of comments on the Instagram.
Because people are like, why do you care?
Well, a lot of the comments were like this. Like, of course, the giant saw an idea from the small guy and took it and then ran with it. And I'm like, I just don't know. Because if I, like, I work in media. I work in PR. Yeah. But if I saw that as a PR person, I'd be like, don't touch that. Like, you're, she's actually starting to be bigger than you. Like, I think she's just a little more like...
Traditional media is not having
I know,
a good
I know.
Moment.
And I know it's trying. And I'll be honest, I think the girl who did the Bon App dinner party series is like very cool.
Right.
Like, know
it
of her.
Cool.
She's very cool. I know she has her own dinner party series she's been doing for years by herself. I think this has nothing to do with her. And I actually, my kind of hot take is I don't think Bon App intentionally ripped it off. I think it was they didn't do enough research.
That's what
and
I was,
it was
gonna
just
say.
A fluke.
But how does it get approved?
But that's the thing. It's like they didn't do enough research. It was an accidental. Somebody should have flagged that, and I don't know why. But the notion of them doing it like malevolently,
it wasn't an attack.
It just seems like it was absent-minded and kind of lazy. But anyway, I think like the girl's great. I just wish like Bon App would change the name and like Kendra, the girl at Bon App,
or address
just do it
and be like, "Whoa, we're so sorry. We didn't realize we were doing like the same name, same colors, or something."
Yeah,
or at least reach out to her privately.
Yeah, I think so too.
But
just change it. But anyway, so that's kind of the goss and
the drama
in
the
food world.
The food world.
Danny, you've got some food news for us too.
Yeah, but like
drum roll.
Well, it's actually so. Gabby and I both have Substacks. I just
very
launched
different.
Mine last week.
Danny's is legit.
Well, not really. I haven't. So, okay. I created a Substack called This Is Probably About Food. It's about culture generally, but I always end up talking about food. So that's why it's called
right.
This Is Probably About Food. And I just really want to get into the Substack culture. So,
I mean, yeah. It's where it's at.
I'm going to launch. Well, it's already launched, but I'm actually working on my editorial calendar this week. So I'll probably have some new stuff.
Something you guys should know about Dani is she's a calendar girl. She's going to get you a social calendar. She's going to get you a shot list. Yeah. She's going to get you an editorial calendar. She's going to
love being organized, like not in my life necessarily, but I love having a to-do list. So I just have a lot of ideas of things I want to cover. The number one thing people ask me is like, oh, what are your favorite places in Paris? Or I'm going to Paris next week. Where should I go have dinner? And I never have like a list or a thing I can just send people easily. So that's also the main reason I'm doing it.
I have a question for you. How are you going to deal with, I feel like when people ask that question, it's so dependent on their situation.
That's also, yeah, that's a big problem. I mean, it's like a New York problem when people are like, what's your favorite restaurant? I'm like, well, what's your budget? Yeah. What neighborhood? Exactly. What kind of food?
What's your mood? What's your vibe?
Right. So yeah. I kind of want to create different, not guides, but different posts about different things of like, even the other day we had a great breakfast burrito at this place called Sia in the 7th, I believe. And I'm like, maybe I should do just a post of like best breakfast. Breakfast burritos in Paris. They're so hard to find.
Times fast.
So, yeah, I think I'm going to do like a bunch of different categories and then maybe have more general ones like by neighborhood or by budget or something like that. But yeah, it's basically.
Can you do Best Caesars?
Yes, we can do a collab with a Caesar salad situation, I'm sure.
Chaos Caesar.
What is your Substack called?
Mine's called Overthoughts, but it's really just me rambling. Do you want to know what the impetus for mine was?
Sure.
I love to complain, but I'm sort of getting to the point where I'm finding complaining not productive.
Like, let me monetize it.
Yeah, truly. But I'm like, you know, I think I have to give something a little more thought before I complain about it. So I'm trying to give my frustrations, you know, the things I overthink about in a way that's not productive, to overthink about it in a way that is productive, to kind of come to conclusions on my overthinking. So that's my... I've actually noticed ever since I started rewriting again, my relationship with social media has become healthier.
Yeah. Didn't you tell me you felt less anxiety when you kind of put it all out?
Yes. It's really helpful. Good. So it's mostly for me, but I found it helpful to put thoughts down.
Don't you find that weird? Because I found it weird when I was like, I have a Substack and I have like 50 people subscribe.
Oh, like immediately 100. Yeah, I know.
I was
I know.
What? People care
about
this?
You don't even know what you're subscribing to, but
I thought it was
going to
be like my mom and 3 friends. And it's like, what? So yeah. But it's, yeah, so we're joining the Substack culture.
Yeah, we're in.
And kind of in line with that, we have some housekeeping that we want to just talk about a few things.
So oh, yeah.
If you are into Substack or you want to create your own, there's an event happening in Paris on March 5th called A New Fashion, Navigating Substack in an Age of Oversaturated Platforms.
Which is actually, by the way,
hosting
like, okay, yeah, go ahead.
But what are you going to say?
No, but this is like a huge I just licked the mic again. This is a huge conversation. I had a new business call the other day and the founder was talking about this and it was like, you know, what is the relevance of Substack at a certain point? Does it just like negate itself because it's so oversaturated? Nobody subscribes to new ones. So this is a very relevant conversation, especially not only if you read, if you write, if you work in media in any capacity, you know?
Yeah. I mean, I'm a content strategist. I work in social. And the number one thing I tell people is like, you need to diversify where you put your content as a brand or as a person. Mm. So, and I do think Substack is having a moment, but I think it's because people are like, I don't want to be on Instagram anymore. I don't want to be on Twitter. I don't want to be on or
also,
X,
I want to be control. Like when you write, when you're a freelance writer, well, a writer in general, you know this because you worked at BuzzFeed, you really are at the whim of your editor. We were just talking about this. Like you have an idea and you have to frame it in a way that works for whatever editor, whether it's like your publication or your freelancing, and having your Substack, you're fully in control. And at this point, so many publications just monetize, you know, everything is a gift guide that has affiliate links that is monetized. So I think a lot of people are just truly feeling this need to write what they want to write without these constraints of capitalism and, and you know, like,
I mean, clicks. Even new media, like, political journalists are creating Substacks because
I mean, really good
there's
ones.
So much censoring and things that are obviously like the entire country's on fire. But a lot of people are like, wait, there's things that I want to say that my editor isn't approving, or whatever publication I'm working for that maybe is owned by a billionaire.
Puck, have you been following Puck? It's like a really good example of this. Puck is like leading the charge in terms of like really innovative, unique. I think they do politics and fashion, which I find interesting. But but great newsletters, great coverage. Yeah.
So yeah, we'll put it in the show notes if you're interested in coming. I think it's pretty sure free.
It is free. I signed up. Yeah.
What else?
Also have a really cool friend who wrote a really cool New York Times article. I'm sure everyone here knows what modern love is. Also, I love her name's Caitlin, and she wrote the most recent modern love piece. It's called My Struggle to Stop Loving Him. Basically, if you've ever still liked someone past the point where it's, you don't know, productive or whatever, it really resonates. I also love that she posted all her email submissions to Modern Love.
I love that. It's like the rejection. It's like we all go through it. Don't worry about it.
Yeah, like to see the actual emails. You're like, oh, wow, it's all of us. Exactly. Yeah. It's all of us. We've all been there. Yeah. So highly recommend that. You have a book you're obsessed with that you want to tell everyone about?
You just got it today.
It sounds like we're doing podcast ads. We're practicing our podcast ads, but for our friends.
Yeah, it's all our friends, which is kind of cool. So I just wanted to quickly shout out my friend Sutanya and her book, Dinner for One. I've been posting about it. If you follow me on Instagram, Gabby just got it today. So hopefully
got it today.
We'll be able to talk about it next.
At Sutanya's house. Hey, Sue.
And it's just a great story. It's basically called Dinner for One, How Cooking in Paris Saved Me. So our friend Sutanya moved here, married a French guy, had the whole love story, and then ended up getting divorced. So it kind of covers everything from like meeting her future husband, falling in love. I'm still in the falling in love stage. And so I keep texting her and I'm like, I kind of like your ex-husband. He's saying all right things. And she's no, Danny. And I was like, I know he's going to break my heart. But right now we're you in like a good him. Spot. You know,
it's an interesting to have a book that talks. Have you ever read Heartburn, the Nora Ephron book?
No.
It's like she's like, you know, in love with her husband, but he just is cheating on her nonstop with like one woman. And it's so painful. But I think it does this really good job of revealing this like really painful mix of like massive love and massive heartbreak at the same time. It's not just bitterness, it's not just anger, it like it's vulnerable, it's open,
the emotions.
Yeah,
well, that's what I like about the book, because it opens up with Sutanya being like post-divorce, partying, drinking too much, hanging out, and she describes this one part of like, you know, after you party all night and you're like fucking drunk and you go to sleep and you wake up and you're still kind of drunk.
Mm-hmm. I knew it this Saturday morning.
Today. But no, she describes this one moment of like being like, fuck, I'm still drunk from like, or like, and like even deep down knowing like, maybe I shouldn't be drinking this much. Maybe I should feel
because
my
of
feelings.
Love.
Yeah, because you're like heartbroken. So like you can't be alone with your thoughts. So you're out in a terrace sipping.
Oh, so she was like literally drunk. I thought it was a metaphor.
No. Like she describes this one moment of like kind of waking up in a drunk post-drunk haze, still kind of being drunk and being like, fuck, like I'm actually not doing that well, and having a moment of like, okay, maybe I should get my shit together, where it's like I think everybody has gone through that in some capacity.
No.
And so never. But then she also describes the falling in love stage, like that new love. So like I was like giddy reading it.
Really?
Like, yeah, I was like, oh my god, these crazy kids.
I don't even
kids,
remember what that
know?
Felt like.
That's why I texted her jokingly. I'm like, oh my god, I love this. Like, I'm rooting for your ex-husband. I'm That's so cute. Sorry. And she goes like, no. And I'm like, well,
I'm
right
so
now
amazed.
We're still in love.
Yeah, but I'm amazed that she post heartbreak was able to write that. About love in that way, because I'm like, as someone who's going, what, how long am I allowed to say going through a breakup? I got like, what, 6 months from it?
How long?
It's been two and a half months.
No, that's pretty,
but
that's fine.
You know, as someone who's in the midst
it's
of like
a
the
full quarter.
Exactly. Sure. I suppose what does it take? Supposed to take you half the time to recover from the length
something
of the relationship?
Like that, yeah.
Whatever. God, you have like kill me.
A year.
Kill it. No, absolutely not. But anyway, as someone who's in that stage, I'm such in an anger stage and a bitterness stage. I can't imagine writing affectionately about my ex. I want to kill him. Right. But like, it's just, I find that really powerful. Like she's clearly very into
that's
with her
what
emotions.
I text her, I'm like, I'm so sorry, but you write falling in love in such a relatable way that I'm like, I'm rooting for these crazy kids, and I know he's gonna break my heart in a couple chapters, but buy her book, read it. It's a great love story too. It also touches a little bit in the cultural differences of like her first time in Paris and all these like mini culture shocks. So I think it's not only a love story, but it's a love story of someone. It was like a long distance, New York, Paris. Then she moves to Paris. So it kind of covers a lot of things that we're both very
going through
with,
and
so.
Circles back to food again.
And circles back to food and basically how food, and when she's having that post-drunk haze, like what the fuck is happening? What time is it? Why am I drunk? What kind of thing? What her like act of love for herself is like, I'm going to cook myself some food because I'm clearly not okay. And I love how it kind of all comes together.
Yeah.
So anyway, highly
I'm excited to read it. All right, to our topic today. Okay, so Danny knows this, but I just got back from New York.
Yep.
And we both live there, obviously. And I was honestly shocked by a lot of things. I mean, it's probably my sixth time.
Since you moved.
Seventh time back. Since, okay.
So what was different about it? Or what stood out the most?
Okay, I mean, It's
hard. What was the experience that made you be like, fuck this place?
Oh my gosh. That should be our episode theme. Okay. It was one experience. We were at the bar at, I'm just going to say the name. Who cares,
who cares?
It's called Bernie's. It's in Greenpoint. And I was with a friend and we were having a good time. Well, I thought we were. Maybe I'm like making it up because I had three martinis. But I was having a good time. And we had three martinis. We had both had a meal.
Three each. Okay. So it's like $100 bill.
$100 each.
Yeah.
On just martinis.
Okay.
Probably. Probably 75 each on just martinis. Then had full meal, sides, and then had dessert. And we're in the middle of finishing our dessert and sipping our last martini. I was probably halfway through. And the bartender comes over to us and she just goes, hey, ladies, a lot of people are waiting for tables.
Okay.
And just makes us leave. Like, makes us leave.
What? Okay. Not that this really matters, but what day of the week was it?
Wednesday.
A Wednesday?
And to be fair, we were there for about 2.5 hours. But
at
first,
night?
At night.
Okay.
But we got there early. Like 5:30.
And was there like a line? What was
going on? Okay. So when we got there, there was open seats and no line.
Okay.
And we didn't have a res and we could sit down. Uh-huh. They didn't tell us.
You sat in the bar.
At the bar. Great. Not even a table. They didn't tell us when we came in, which sometimes they'll do, which like I still find to be
like,
sad.
You have a tour window,
yes,
or whatever.
But like at least you're warned so you can pace yourself. I wouldn't have gotten a third martini and dessert if I knew we were going to have to like rushed out of there. And didn't tell us. And then when they told us to leave, did it in such an abrupt, rude way. Okay, I'm not unfamiliar with this turning tables to stay alive in New York. And there's like a million ways I think she could have done it.
Yep.
But I just was floored. And I think what it just did is made me really appreciate aspects of Paris that I think sometimes people find annoying, which we've talked about a little bit on the pod. I just had this moment of really appreciating the joy and leisure and the dining culture here.
Taking your time to eat and no rush.
No rush.
You don't have to order. You can just
you
nurse,
could nurse
the
that
time.
Exactly.
To.
That little glass of wine and a plate of fries for hours. I love that. And I obviously like, I don't blame waitresses. I don't blame bartenders. I don't blame dining culture.
Yeah, but it ruins the experience.
It's the fault of New York rent.
That it's only about money. They don't care about money.
Yeah. And it's a bummer because I know they have to do it to stay alive. It sucks.
Yeah.
I do think there's better service culture that could be done around it, you know? So anyway, I think it just made me think. So I thought it would be interesting to, like, I think we both thought it would be interesting to talk today about like
restaurant
the differences,
culture.
Restaurant culture, what we've learned. Obviously, Paris, New York is kind of the focus, but I mean, I'm from Wisconsin, you're from Miami, we both traveled around. It's just, I think it's such an interesting, especially as restaurants have just become this empire, you know, in terms of the infatuation, I mean, in terms of all these, like, I mean, Michelin obviously started ages ago, but it is a pinnacle of the culture that it's in, you know, it's representative. Like New York dining culture is like a truly like a behemoth of its own, you know?
Yeah. I mean, it's a whole world. It's so different now, too. And it's so different from Paris. I mean, the one thing they have in common is they're big cities. That's about it. I would say we're framing this very like New York versus Paris, but a lot of it is going to be like Paris
Europe.
Versus the U.S.
Oh, yeah, really. Yeah.
Europe versus Europe. Yeah, you're right.
Yeah.
But so basically we have a few things on the list we're gonna
I think
go
service
down the list
service is
about.
An interesting one, like to start, you know.
One thing that a lot of Americans complain about in Paris is like service isn't good.
Mm-hmm.
Meaning the server isn't checking in on you. You ask for water, it's been 15 minutes, they haven't brought back whatever you ordered. Which I think at the beginning normally that's a normal thing to complain about because you're so used to having a server checking in on you 5 minutes. But on the flip side, they're always trying to upsell you on something.
Mm-hmm.
It's like, oh, you want another drink? Do you want to get this? Are you still hungry? You know, we're here. They just leave you to it to mm-hmm. enjoy your meal. And yes, sure, maybe it's annoying that you asked for water 15 minutes ago. But I think it's not really intentional. Like, it's not bad service. They're just like, I'm just going to let them hang out.
Mm-hmm.
I think they don't think about it as like, let me ask every 5 minutes if they need something else. And I think when you go to a French person in the U.S., they're like, why the fuck are they annoying me every 5 minutes? It's such an interesting like contrast.
And it's interesting. I think what I've been so shocked by is how my opinion of it has changed since living here.
Same.
Because I used to find it infuriating. I used to be the cliche American, like, God, can a girl get a bill around here? Like, just like sitting there, like waving at the garçon. Just kidding. Obviously, I wouldn't do that. But truly, I just couldn't understand. And then first of all, one thing I learned that changed my life, you can just get up and go pay.
Yeah.
So that.
Oh, I love that.
I do it almost every single.
Just like, I want to get the fuck
out of here. I want to get up. So I get up and I go pay. It's great.
Yeah.
Every once in a while, I'll get up and I'll just go order again to the waiter. It's like, it takes 2 seconds. It's not a big deal. It changes your frustration. But now I'm from Wisconsin. So talk about like, hey guys, hey ladies, can I get you anything? Like 2 seconds after your food's come to the table, you're like, I haven't taken a bite. So I think that didn't used to annoy me. And now it really annoys me. I find it pressury. Yeah. I find it, you know what, the specific thing that drives me crazy? When they come over and they're like, would you ladies want anything for dessert? And then you're like, no, thank you.
It's, like it's time for
and
you.
And then they have the check in their pocket. Yeah. I'm like, you had it there the whole time. You betrayed me. How did you know I didn't? You know, I just can't stand it. I want them to give me time. Okay, loiter a while. Chill here. Do you want a coffee? Like, take your time.
For me, it's like the way I see it now, and I didn't before. It's for me, I'm like, you're always trying to upsell me. You don't actually care if I'm having a good time or if I need more water.
Yep.
You're trying to figure out what else you can add on to my tab mm-hmm. so you make a bigger tip, which again, I understand that's literally your job.
And your income.
But I'm like, I just see it as like, fuck, all you care about is money. You don't care if I'm having a good time.
You know?
Whereas here, the server doesn't care if I live or die, but he's not acting like he does. So it's like...
Yeah, there's no fakeness to
yeah,
it.
He's yeah. He's just like, you want water? Okay, maybe in 15 minutes I'll give you one.
I mean, right, exactly. And also good luck getting water ever.
Yeah, in Paris. Like, that's fine. And then the second thing we want to go over is menus. So yeah. Obviously this is very subjective and there's a lot of restaurants that do things differently. But in general, Parisian restaurants are all about seasonal ingredients and also local ingredients. It's like huge here. And you know it's a seasonal thing because it's strawberry season. And you're going to see strawberry tart in every fucking menu, which is great because it's like you're eating seasonal and stuff. But I find menus... or restaurants in general to be more traditional here.
Mm-hmm.
There's not a lot of diversity or innovation, which I think New York is really good at. Mm-hmm. So I would say that's the biggest difference.
Yeah.
Of course, again, there's exceptions to this, but in general.
That's the case.
And then the one thing I do love about the menu situation.
Is asparagus season? Just kidding.
No, well, yes, I love it.
Have you guys ever been to Paris during white asparagus season?
Well, I love a formule sometimes. So
French.
It's very Parisian. The formule is basically like, a 3 or 2 course meal you can pay for. I love a for meal for lunch because it's usually a really great deal. You can usually find them for 20 or under 20 euros and you can get a 3-course meal for lunch. And I don't know, I like something that's sitting down and having like 3 courses for lunch. That's like something you never do in New York.
Yeah, you first of all, yes, you're right. Never do in New York. Second of all, $20 for 3 courses.
Impossible.
Are you kidding me? In New York? No.
In this economy?
Not even a glass of wine.
There's a place in Belleville called that I love, Paloma. It's 14 euros for a 3-course meal.
Oh, see, that's literal insanity.
That's impossible. Yeah. You would never be able to find that in New York. No, and if you do, it'll be like more like fast foody. This is like a sit-down restaurant.
I don't think you can even get a sandwich for $14 in New York.
Yeah, or a salad.
Yeah, that's, you know? I think my salmon bagel was like 13 or something.
Yeah, I will say where New York wins in this menu battle is I do think menus in New York are normally more creative and innovative. Mm-hmm. And I think menus...
More international too.
Yes.
Yeah.
And I think menus in France or in Paris more specifically, of course, many exceptions because the food scene...
Evolving.
Is evolving.
You know what's wild? That New York is so good at bagels and so bad at bread.
True.
So or interesting. Like, and it was because of the water, but it just...
I don't know what it is because there was one place I would get baguettes from, but baguette was like $6. Oh,
no, but that's it. I'm it's like a pinnacle, what? Like that 4F place. And
I used to get it from the Meat Hook in
Williamsburg. Yeah.
I don't know where they got their bread from, but it was really good. But it was 5 or 6 euros. And every time I got it, Paul's like, I'm going to divorce you.
No,
like,
I mean,
he's like, this is insane. We can't pay $5.
You know, today my tradition that I got was 1 euro 30. And I was like, 1 euro 30? Yeah. It's supposed to be 1 euro 20.
Like, they raise it 10 cents, people are like in the streets. Like, no, but they're like, we're going to overthrow the government.
Yeah, I agree. In the 18th? You kidding me?
Yeah, it's crazy.
I think the other thing. Okay, so the other thing that stood out to me. So I had a little anecdote. I was at this place in Greenpoint, like a trendy natural wine bar.
Of course.
I like natural wine, though it does overlap on kombucha for me. So I think like I'm one of those people that is embarrassing. You know, a waiter comes to the table and they're like, I'm like, I'll have a red. And they're like, something, they're like, quelque chose léger. I mean, light.
Yes.
Something light. And I'm like, no. I'm like, I want heavy. I want a bold. I want my red wine to taste like meat. I want like a meaty red. So I'm the exception.
But people like that. Like, I'm sure the
old men like that.
Yeah.
Traditional French people like that. So I like it.
You just get like a Bordeaux or Bordeaux.
Exactly. Yeah. So Bordeaux, Bourgogne. So I went to this wine bar and, you know, it's good wine, but it's light. And I go to pay and my friend and I are going to split it. And guess how much the bill was?
A bottle I get, or no,
two
a
glasses.
Glass.
Two glasses.
Two glasses. I would say between 20 to 25 each.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It was $49.
I paid $74 for a natural wine
bottle
at a natural wine, natural wine bar in Williamsburg last time I was there. And I was like, hey, I'll get a bottle for the table. I don't know why I did that because I thought I was in Paris. And then I tell the girl, do you have anything that isn't French? Because I live in France. I would love to, if I'm going to pay crazy prices, at least something interesting that I haven't tried. She goes, no. And I was like, okay, great. Well, what do you have like for orange wine? And she goes, so what's your budget? And again, everything is centered about the money, which, yep, again, throws me off.
To be fair, they do ask you that question here. Of course. But you know what's crazy? When I first started buying wine here, I'd always go, I don't know, like 25, 30. And every time I go like this, whoa, okay. Yeah. Oh, well, please, you're on the option. Like, it's like immediately it's like this.
Yeah. So yeah, she tells like, me what's your budget. Here. I was like, I don't know. I don't want to pay more than like $70. And she's like, our cheapest bottle is $74.
Oh, my God.
And I was like, well, I guess that's what I'm going to take. I don't even care what it tastes like.
In Paris, $74 for a bottle. That would be insane.
That's like a vintage, like special something. Oh,
you're balling out. That's an insane bottle of wine for $74.
I don't think I've ever spent that much money on wine. No,
here, $35 to me is a lot.
Yeah.
When I go to Prince House for dinner, I do 20 to 25 usually for a Prince House.
The most I've spent was I bought a bottle of Ruinart champagne.
Oh, champagne. It's a little deaf.
And Ruinart is like a great champagne. And I paid $60, €60 for it. And I think that's the most expensive thing I've ever bought here. Because I was visiting the estate. So I was like, might as well.
No, champagne's diff. I mean, I've obviously spent hundreds on whiskey as your husband. That was my weird whiskey habit.
But whiskey's different because you're not going to down.
You're not
going
to down it in one night.
You know?
Yeah.
Champagne, you open it, you have to drink it. Yeah. Wine, sort of the same. But $74 for a natural and orange wine from fucking France. And then I looked it up and it was €20 here. I was so pissed.
You looked it up and it was 20 here?
I was like, I need to know how much I overpaid for
that. Can you tell we become like insufferable?
I know.
Even this conversation, I'm like, oh my God, we're insufferable.
What living here does to you.
Yeah.
Anyway, so the next up, we're going to talk about reservations. So
I feel like they're kind of the same.
I was going to say that. Yeah, I think both cities are reservation heavy.
This is so stupid, but you know, in New York, I cannot stand that they don't like. Okay, once again, can I just make a concession for all the waiters out there? Believe me, I've actually never been a waiter. I've worked a lot of retail.
I have not either. I was a hostess for a long time. So I was in the culture.
Serving-ish.
I was in the family, but I was not a waiter.
Yeah. So I do want to acknowledge, like, I know it's a shit job. The same way that, like, hard, Black Friday retail is a shit job. Frankly, I think waiters probably harder and Westerns are probably harder. Yeah. So I do acknowledge this, but I really can't stand that they don't let you sit until your friends like there. Until your entire party's there. I kind of understand the logic, but I'm like, if you give me a 2-hour window, just let me sit during that 2-hour window. We'll speed up our food.
Yeah, like not I'll order for my friends. I'll order. Fuck.
Literally, I'm the queen of, you know, my whole relationship with being late / being early. So I'll just recap for you guys because I don't know. This is just like the greatest joy of my life. I used to always be early / I often am early or very on time. A lot of my friends are often late.
Yeah.
Actually, this has gotten better. But when I first moved here, almost everyone was 20 minutes late. I know, but I was like so angry. I don't want to be angry anymore. Well, so my new thing is angry. I get there. They let me sit. I order a drink and I order an appetizer.
Yeah.
I'm like, you're 20 minutes late.
I feel like if you're over 15 or 20 minutes late, then I'm ordering.
I've had friends be 45.
No, I would be like, date is over.
No, but I'm like, I'm going to be 2 drinks in.
Yeah.
So if you don't let me sit, what are you doing?
Reservation wise, I think Paris is a big reservation town. And I think a lot of people don't think that. And so they come here and they show up to a restaurant on a Friday night at 8 p.m. They're like, what do you mean you don't have any tables? So it's just a warning for anyone who's visiting. If you really want to go somewhere that takes reservations, make them. Number one. Number two, I will say the reservation game in Paris is not as cutthroat as New York. I know New York has like a black market for some places.
Did you see they just apparently, there's just some news story.
They had to make it like illegal.
They like shut it down or something.
But that's crazy. Yeah. That there was like a black market because it's like, there was like, I don't know, a handful of restaurants that there was just not enough reservations available. So people would buy them off the black market or some shit like that.
I'm not surprised by that.
That's insane. Yeah. I don't think, or at least I don't know about it. I don't think that happens in Paris. So
Subteam is hard. There's some places
Yes, but it's like you can still get a table. Maybe you have to have dinner at 5 p.m., but you can still get tables. And or if you organize yourself and you book it a month in advance, you will get a table. And if not, there's so many good places here. Like you can always find reservations. I don't think it's as cutthroat, but I do think a lot of people think Paris, you're just going to show up and get a table.
I know. Anywhere. I always warn people. No. I always warn people now. Make a reservation.
Always make a reservation unless you're okay with rolling up to whichever random like French brasserie.
Yeah, I mean, they really are necessary.
Okay, well, let's touch on portion sizes. So,
well, you know me, I like a big.
I big go back and forth. I actually like the idea. So Paris is obviously everything is smaller. Everything's like a small plate. get a bunch of them, share them with friends. Whereas I think in not just in New York, but generally in the US, portions are bigger. Like,
can we say one caveat here that I just thought of as we're talking? So that's like the trendy restaurants.
Of course.
If you go to an old bistro, you're going to get a giant poulet fermier.
You're going to get a huge dish.
Yeah.
The trendy hipster spots that everybody's like, go visit this place or whatever.
Yeah.
And I think actually in New York is probably the same. A lot of this trendy
places. But there's like, you know, all the, there's, oh, what is the place I went to in Queens? Like this Italian place.
Oh, Rolo's?
Yeah, Rolo's. Yeah. The places that are now trendy actually do have big more like portions of lasagna. Like old, yeah, it's like more old school. Yeah.
I mean, but I think, yeah, in full general, circle, people love small dishes here. And it's usually like, order a bunch so you can try a lot of like different kinds of things from the menu. And I think one thing that, outside of food, that's really interesting portion wise, that's much smaller here than in the US we normally get giant sizes of, is water. Oh. So
how did I not know where you were going with that?
This is like one of the main complaints I get from, or I hear from Americans. It's like, why do they give you like a shot glass?
Oh, why? First of all, you have to order it four times.
You also have to ask for a carafe d'eau, which is like a fucking, not jar, pitcher, but like a pitcher of water, like a jar of water, which is basically the free water. Mm-hmm. If they ask you, do you want natural sparkling? They're going to charge you for
it. I made that mistake.
Me too.
Last night.
Like, yeah.
Gab, come on. And what they do is they go plat pétillant. Yeah, and plat like, pétillant, you go plat. Yeah. And you think that means carafe, but no, plat is a bottle of expensive water.
Yeah, yeah, if you explicitly don't say carafe d'eau, they're going to be like,
she said carafe d'eau. But yeah, I think water, you know, last night I went to a cocktail bar, got a shot glass of water.
Oh, I went to a very trendy Mexican place on Friday. And this man handed me a literal shot glass. And I was like, well, this is going to be a fun night. I'm going to take shots of water all night.
I know, but like the US, like ice, cup of ice, like a nonstop water. They refill it before you look at your table. It's refilled.
Well, not only is it a giant, like 32-ounce glass, it's filled to the brim with ice, a straw, and water, like overflowing. Mm-hmm. And anytime you take two sips of that glass, waiter's filling it up again.
They're back, yeah.
And to me, that's a funny, I think that is the funniest like difference of like proportions here. Of like, it's not even, I mean, the food, yes, but the water situation is so
Do you know
completely different.
It's so different. So I was with my sister and we were at this like kind of touristy terrace, but it's a great view. It's right by the sun. And we ordered, the waiter was really nice to us, like roughly 150 years old. It was really nice to us. We split a salad, frisoles, lardons. And then he's like so happy with us. We get our little salad to split, which I thought he'd be mad. He was so happy. Get two glasses of white wine. He's all good. And then we go, ah, excusez-moi, on peut faire un carafe d'eau, s'il vous plaît? He goes, like literally like, what? Of he course. Like, he was like, he like did this thing where it's like, he's like, and there we go. Like you guys were doing so well.
And now
you go. Yeah. And it made me realize they really, really judge us for the water.
And then
thing.
Another shocking thing that kind of goes with the water thing is the ice ratio. So here, first of all, no one's ever going to give you ice willingly. You need to ask for it. And even when you ask for it, if you get three
have
cubes,
you even asked for ice? You asked for ice for water or for wine?
No, for like, I don't know, if you want ice.
I like never even asked for ice.
Never for water, but like if you get a Coke and you get a glass, if they give you two ice cubes and you're like, can I get like more, they'll give you one ice cube more, and that's like generous.
We have to ration.
Yeah,
I was laughing because my favorite influencer Meredith Wishbone Kitchen, as I've talked about like roughly 4,000 times on this pod, she broke her knee and she just was in Paris and she's like, I did not realize the ice shortage in
the
Paris because she couldn't get ice for her knee.
It's
at a bougie hotel. I'm like, that doesn't surprise me.
But that's the thing. It's such a funny thing how it's like we take it for granted in the U.S. because we just have it available at all times, no matter the month
of the
season.
Ice machine in our fridge. Well, I didn't grow up with that, but
I think I
that to me was luxury.
That is luxury.
That with a cabinet with goldfish and Cheez-Its, that was my dream of my whole life. Parents would only let us have like whole grain Triscuits.
Anyway, if you come to Paris, don't expect
let me talk about my snack trauma.
No, I love that's a different segment in the podcast, but I'm just saying, if you come to Paris, don't expect a lot of water and don't expect a lot of ice, because that's just not what you're gonna get.
But you know what you have to start to expect?
Tipping.
A little tip on your machine.
Thanks, Americans, for ruining this for
that's
us.
Wild. It is wild. You know, it's hard. I feel a little weird talking about it because sometimes I'm like, I don't know what restaurant culture is exactly like working inside. Maybe they really do need that tip, but we are trained in Paris. You tip a tiny bit on a really expensive meal, or if your waiter's really great, a couple euros. But tipping,
like a great tip is €5.
Oh yeah, yeah.
Like,
I mean,
wow,
that's a great tip.
You had like excellent service.
Yeah, but that's because for anyone who doesn't know, they make a full
salary. Yeah.
So they have
benefits.
Yeah. So they have, you know, things that waiters in the US don't have.
The salary isn't great, that's for sure. But you still have a lot of things that people in the US don't have, like your five week vacations and all the other benefits. You have universal healthcare. So I'm not saying that they don't need it, but it's not as bad as the US, where they, in the US,
that's 80%
of your paycheck comes from tips.
Yes. Yeah.
Here, that's not the case. Yeah. And tipping wasn't even a thing until, like, I would say a couple of years ago.
It definitely wasn't when I moved here. I moved here 5 years ago. So
and,
I would say,
and again, like Abby said, like, if you had excellent service somewhere, you would leave the guy €5 if it's like incredible. Right. €10 if it's like, this is the best service I've had in my life. Yes. And you're spending like €100. So it's like 10, not even 10%.
I know.
But now, because of all the Americans that have moved here and because of obviously a lot of the American tourists that come here and tip anyway, a lot of the restaurants, and specifically in like the very trendy touristy areas, but also like the coffee shops, the hipster places, have now implemented tipping in their system. So now when you're going to go pay, you get a little pop-up that says, do you want to leave 10, 15 or 20%?
What do you do? Do you have a rule for yourself yet?
Yes. So if I get excellent service, sure, maybe right. 10%. If I don't get good service, I pretend I'm French and I just... Mm-hmm. Reject it.
You know, sometimes the waiters, which I like really respect, the waiters here will just exit out before they give it to you.
Me and Paul were talking about this. So we have a theory that that happens if they hear you, if you're in a group with mostly French people or only French speakers. If you're in a group of people who are speaking English, they'll leave it. That's my theory.
Whoa.
Because
can you guys do that? Try that and report back to us. I'm so curious.
Because Paul's like, Paul was telling me like it never happens to him when he's by himself because he speaks French.
Okay, that is wild.
And they can tell
so they
he's
can
French.
Spot me from a fucking mile away.
All any of us. They're like, these fucking Americans, let's put up the tip. Let's put up the tip for them.
They're like, they ask for ice.
Our group
out.
Of friends is mainly Americans, Canadians, like English speakers. So when we all got, we're like a group of 10 fucking loud ass
from across the street.
Anglophones are like, ugh. This is gonna make our night. Throw up the tip. So
you know what we didn't talk about, which I realized is not on our list.
What?
Noise levels.
Oh, this is very you.
That is actually
this is very yeah.
Wait, why? Because no, I'm autistic. Sorry, no. I'm like actually not joking about that.
No,
I'm pretty
know,
sure I'm
no,
on the spectrum.
I know. Okay, not noise levels in general, but I know vibe is a big thing for you.
Oh, vibe.
The vibe.
Yes, but
lighting,
I think
all that stuff.
Yes, but let me just go on my two-minute rant. Start the timer.
About
just
vibing?
About all of this. Okay. But okay. So the noise levels in New York are out of control.
Agreed.
They also, and not just New York, it's Wisconsin. Wisconsin's actually worse. Like there will be someone with a, oh my God, there will be someone with a sharp laugh in Wisconsin. Like it'll like resonate throughout the room. People are screaming.
I do know when we all go out and we're like a group of more than five English speakers.
Yeah, it picks up.
We are loud.
But
as
you
fuck.
Know what? I like don't blame myself so much for that because I'm a mumbler.
I mean, I don't care.
Like, I don't know. It's just like, I don't think that I'm, well, we'll see. I'm not taking so much of the blame for the noise levels.
I don't think
but.
It's, I don't, okay. French people when they're drunk are loud as fuck and they're obnoxious. So I'm like, I don't
this
care.
This is true.
Yes. So I'm like, don't tell me that I am loud because I'm American.
But for some reason in restaurants.
That's true. They talk, they're very like.
They like whisper. Like you walk into a French restaurant, like, is anyone having a conversation here? It's so
they're whispering
weird.
Sweet nothings.
They're whispering. And so I will say though, it's like really nice when you want to have like an intimate, I mean, talking about dating.
Were you at that Mexican place where we almost got kicked out?
Yes. I've almost got kicked out of multiple restaurants, but I,
to
you know
fair,
what?
It was a Mexican place that served frozen margaritas.
In
what
a
did they
picture.
Expect?
Yeah. What do you do? Shitty fajitas,
it's
frozen margaritas. You know who you are attracting.
Yeah. It's called fajitas.
Yeah, exactly.
You're not going there for a quiet meal.
No.
So anyway.
Whatever.
But okay,
I think noise levels, I actually like the noise levels in Paris, though granted I feel a little like I stand out. But I can talk quietly. You guys can't tell from the pod, but to be fair, I've actually been told my noise levels are low. Which is why I've been licking the microphone.
I don't care
episode.
If I'm loud. If I'm having a good time, like
life
we're
is
in public. Who cares?
Agreed. Also think I think Paris has a vibe problem, which is crazy.
Paris has a vibe problem. I see that as like the headline from like
memoir or something.
The cut or something.
Yeah. I think the restaurants. Okay, this is not the old school restaurants. I think the old school restaurants have a great
better
vibe.
Yeah, I agree.
Wooden, stone. I love those like Normandy ceilings with like those wooden planks or whatever. I love that stuff. Bistros, brasseries, totally fine. The trendy restaurants are struggling on the vibe. Why are there bright lights everywhere? The most uncomfortable seating you've ever experienced.
Metal.
Oh my,
industrial.
Everything is metal. Everything is like blue light. It's so
weird.
Give
me color. Give me texture.
Sometimes they don't even have music playing. I'm like, what are you guys doing? I don't get it. I'm totally confused.
I agree.
New York has nailed vibe
vibes,
a
yeah,
lot
I
more.
Agree.
But because I think in New York, everyone's trying to have sex. Like, actually, I guess Paris, maybe they're trying to do that too. I don't really know.
But I
York,
think
Paris
the people that
want
to have sex go to a bistro or go to like a brasserie.
What?
I mean, that's...
No, you think so? Is that how you're going to more bistro brasseries?
I think it's sexier than there than like a trendy.
You mean like a couple on a date? That
yeah,
wants
yeah,
to
yeah. Sex. Like I think you're gonna see like a French couple making out in a corner and like a old school bistro over than like a hipster maybe. Natural wine yeah. bar in the 11th. You know,
maybe
I don't know. Maybe I just don't go out enough to.
I don't know. You can that. you can do a makeout trial and report back. Let us know. But anyway, it drives me crazy. So I think noise level / vibe. I bet you I'm going to get people who disagree with me on this. And I think it's just because we probably frequent different places. But
I do think Paris has a coziness problem. But I'll talk about this later.
Oh, yeah.
So I agree with you on that. 100%.
You have a rant on it.
Yeah. Okay. So the other thing that's very different is dining hours, which is, again, something that if you haven't lived there or if you don't frequent Paris, you wouldn't know. But we talked about this in an earlier pod, how the French have very strict eating hours. So basically they won't eat after certain times. Same thing goes for restaurants. A lot of restaurants will close between lunch and dinner.
There is no worse nightmare than being trapped in Paris between 3 to 5 p.m.
Yeah, you're gonna starving. Have to eat McDonald's basically. Mm-hmm. And so just keep that in mind when you come here after the lunch rush, which is
well, actually
2 to 3.
We can tell people to look for service continue.
Yes,
that's something to
then,
look for.
I don't know if you've eaten
they change
hours.
The menu.
No, the food isn't that good.
Yeah, fair.
It feels like reheated, which is like, it's fine, but it's not like, it doesn't feel fresh.
Right.
At least that's happened to me.
Yeah.
So basically anything after 3 p.m. is going to be either shitty or closed. So, which is something that I feel like in New York, obviously some restaurants also have the same thing, but a lot, you can pretty much eat anything at any time in New York, 24 hours. Also, I think restaurants here close earlier. I think late night food in Paris is not as diverse as New York. Hmm. It's like kebabs and McDo. Like, there's really not that much variety. So I do think dining hours in New York, you can eat most things at any hour.
You can also order.
You can order.
Most things yep. at any hour. Like, you can really order anything. If you go on, the other night it was 3 a.m. and I was starving and I yep. went on, there's Pizza Hut and like almost nothing else.
Yeah.
Like, truly, there's nothing to order
but
at 3
a.m.
here.
But that's what I'm saying. For me, it's always like, yeah, like, you get home drunk, and it's like 2 in the morning, you're like, I'm starving.
I have
I
a
eat?
Drunk pasta box that I pull from. I pulled from it Friday night, and I just keep it there in my closet.
For me,
closet.
It's always like a kebab or McDonald's.
Yeah.
And so there's not a lot of
I did
options.
Burger King the other day.
And?
It's fine.
Does it hold up?
Yeah, I mean, it's I mean, chicken nuggets. It's like ground up chicken beak, so kind of the same across the board.
But anyway, and then like to kind of close it, I mean, there's two more things we want to touch on, but the dining experience, which we already kind of talked about, but we talked about how you can really nurse a drink. You can sit in a terrace. You don't have to spend money. They're not going to check in on you for 5 minutes. So that's like the biggest thing.
That is luxury.
But also on the, if you're going to look at the negative of it, this is something that I tell also my friends who come visit. There's no such thing as a quick lunch here unless you're doing takeout. Mm. This happened to me every time I had my lunch hour during work and a friend was visiting. I'm like, let's have a quick lunch. That's at least an hour. Not because of anything, but they take their sweet ass time and they're not in a rush.
Serving you?
Yes.
Yeah.
I counted it. I went to a brasserie by my old apartment. I was like, I have an hour. That should be enough. An hour and a half was my lunch. So just keep that in mind if you're in a rush. Paris is not the place to be in a rush.
No.
And if you're
Paris
in a rush,
is not the place to be in a rush. Yeah, exactly.
Take out. Don't even, or go to like, you know, not the fast food, but yeah, get L&D's. Go somewhere. Yeah, L&D's. Somewhere where you don't have to wait around. But if you're going to get service at a restaurant, it's never going to be quick. Mm-hmm. Sometimes you might be surprised and it is, but just in general, it's not the case. Mm-hmm. And then closing it all out, which is, I think, something we kind of talked about at the beginning of this. I think the biggest difference between Paris and New York is truly the price. And you kind of mentioned this when you came back from New York. You said, I feel like no one has money to do anything anymore in New York.
It's really sad.
Yeah.
And I think I just feel like that what you're paying is so disproportionate from the experience you're having.
Yeah.
I think I don't know. I don't know how you feel, Danny, but like when I travel, like you go to Italy, you go to like a random hole in the wall restaurant, you have the best gnocchi, the best peachy pasta, whatever the hell of your life.
Yeah.
And then you go to New York and you spend $75 for like two bowls of pasta.
And natural wine.
It just, yeah, I mean, exactly. And it doesn't match up. It's
with
kind of
quality.
Yeah. It's just kind of, to me, it's like the experience of waiting in line for 2 hours for something which diminishes the quality of it.
Of course.
It's the same thing. It's just paying $250 for, and I'm not even kidding. It was like a bowl of mozzarella sticks, a Caesar salad, and I don't even remember, but something that was like very American. And it's just spending that much money. It's just nothing is that good. Nothing is worth that price.
I agree. And I think that's something we talk about a lot. Like when you live in Paris, obviously there's expensive restaurants too, but the everyday routine of going out and having a drink with friends or having lunch or trying this bakery, you can be broke and you can be on a budget and you can still enjoy these parts of your life of let's go get a drink. Let's go get a, let's
I mean,
go to the wine bar.
A glass of wine can be 4 or 5 euros.
Yeah. If you drink like the house wine, I think it was in Bouillon Pigalle, we got like a magnum bottle for like 15 euros. Yeah. Obviously, it's the shittiest wine you're going to drink, but who cares? You're with friends. You're
also, just having... it's shitty wine in France, which means it's actually not that shitty. Yeah, that would probably be $50 in New York.
Yeah, but that's what I'm saying. Like, obviously, there's things that are expensive here. I'm not saying there aren't, but you have so many choices. Like, I was really shocked about, I saw an infatuation campaign they did with like Chase, I think it was, about how the average... Chase owns them. Oh, well, that makes sense. But they did a whole thing for Valentine's about how the average date night in New York costs $200. Mm. So dinner for two...
I'm actually surprised it's not more.
Yes.
To be honest. Same, if you drink, I'm surprised it's not more. But
then when I compared it to what me and Paul spend when we go to dinner, I can't remember the last time we spent 200 euros. I know.
Well, that would be... Michelin.
Yeah, Michelin menu. And even that, I was trying to think the last time we did that... And I think we got a menu, like a Michelin star, whatever. And it was like a 90 euro per person.
Yeah. That would be Michelin plus drinking, I think.
Exactly.
Yeah.
But I'm like $200 for... And then so their whole campaign was like, we can do it for cheaper. And so they went to a diner and had hamburgers. And they still spent $112.
Yeah, I mean, I'm not surprised by the diner thing either.
And I'm like, okay, again, I love a diner. I'm not saying there's anything wrong with that. But the fact that you go to on your date night to a diner to have hamburgers and, you spend $112.
But have you seen that? Like, there's like, it's like the New York Happy or the New York Happy Meal. Is that what they call it? McDonald's? Why am I?
Yeah. Happy Meal.
Yeah. So it's like a New York Happy Meal. It's like fries. It's like fries, Caesar salad and a martini. The martini is like a little baby. And then I saw the Caesar salad. It's like four leaves of lettuce.
No.
Girl, if I want a Caesar salad, I want a Caesar I want salad. I want a bowl.
Lettuce.
I want a giant. I want it packed in there. That's insane to me. I will offer that one other, like, I have one hesitation around this, which I've been told a million times, where I'm like, Paris is so cheap. It's not cheap for French people in other places.
Compared to New York.
It's not cheap to Spanish people. It's not cheap to people who live in other regions. Yes. It is cheap compared to New York. I think cheap compared to London.
Yes.
So these are like my, but I want to say, like, but for anyone who lives in like Bordeaux or whatever.
The options to, yes, maybe you're not going to eat at the trendiest, more like the hipster, cool, new, trendy places, but you can still go to a brasserie or a bistro or something more low key and have like a good meal for 25 euros.
Yeah.
You know, like there are options here. And of course, there are options in New York too. You can go to Chinatown and have an incredible meal and spend $25. Like, for sure, that exists. But in general, the act of meeting up with friends, having a few drinks, it's not going to bankrupt you, or you don't have to be like, oh, I already had brunch this month, I can't do that. Here, I think there's more possibilities to enjoy the dining experience because it's not all centered around money. Mm-hmm. Whereas I think in New York, it's become the main focus is how much money can we make? How much money can we spend? And then it takes the magic away from the dining experience.
Yeah.
And like you said, you're not getting, it's not like you're getting superior service or superior products necessarily. It's just everything has gotten so out of control expensive that people are just trying to survive. And in turn, people are not going out because they're like, I got to pay rent. I can't have martinis tonight.
I mean, this is my whole other conversation that we'll have on another episode of the podcast, but like why I think New York is getting more boring.
I agree.
I just think people are boring.
It's lost its magic. Yeah. And it's not, I'm not saying that because I don't live there anymore, but I feel like after COVID, a lot of the people that, and a lot of the businesses and a lot of the stores and restaurants that gave it that quirkiness and magic and like...
Yeah. And spontaneity.
Yes.
Like you used to be able to be spontaneous. It's funny because I actually didn't... Everyone was like right after COVID. Honestly, I went back like 5 times. I had an amazing time. I loved it. This last time, I'm like, it has fully spiraled.
Yeah.
It has spiraled. So anyway...
It's only gotten worse.
Yeah. That's our convo for another pod.
And okay, so if you had to pick... What's the good and the bad? Or which one would you pick?
It's as hard. Like right now,
the better city for a food experience.
Well, right now, I'll be honest, I prefer the variety of food in New York.
Okay.
But the stress and discomfort and anxiety it makes me feel to eat out, I would pick eating out here, delivery New York.
Oh, that's a great compromise. I actually like that. Yeah, that's cool. I like that. Yeah.
All right. Time for our segment. How do you not know this?
Huh? So we're each bringing something in culture that we're obsessed with, and we're going to teach each other what that thing is about. So today, have you ever heard, are you familiar with Reddit, but more specifically Reddit Snark?
I've very loosely heard of this, but I'm going to need a massive like, education here.
So The Cut recently wrote an article about this, which was super fascinating because they interviewed some of these editors that run these Snark pages. So
do they call themselves editors?
Well, Redditors, whatever.
Oh, interesting.
Okay. Actually, I have no idea what they call themselves, but essentially, Reddit has these subreddits called Snark, and they have them all over. So there's the New York influencer one, there's the LA influencer one. There's actually two dedicated to two big influencers in Paris that I've only seen one, but I've heard of the other, and they are wild. So essentially, it's a subreddit dedicated to people talking shit about influencers. Oof. And, you know, sometimes you're like, whatever, some of these influencers are insufferable. But the detail in which they talk about these people, I'm like, who is their friends? Has the time?
Oh.
Well, I don't know if they're friends. I mean, some of them, I mean, the one I've seen about the Paris one, I'm like, this person knows this girl. Because some of the things they talk about, I'm like, it's just very creepy. And if I were one of the influencers targeted by these subreddits, I would be like, should I get a restraining order?
Do you think you would be flattered or horrified?
I think I would be horrified. I would quit the internet if someone had, basically they update them daily. And what they talk shit. Basically anytime any of these influencers post, they dissect every single thing they post, how they're talking to camera, who's in the background, what is the person wearing, do they have a double chin, like anything you can think. Yes, it's crazy.
My nightmare.
And it's just kind of sad because, again, I understand that people like to talk shit about influencers. It's like kind of comes with the territory, right? But to dedicate all this time and effort into creating a community, because they have at least, I think they were saying like,
that's like their bonding.
At least the New York influencer one, I think has.
Who's on the New York influencer?
I haven't checked it in a while. I know there was one with
Daniel Bernstein.
I don't think so. Really? No. Okay. I mean, at least the one I saw, but 145,000 people look at these. At least a New York one.
I mean, but it's kind of before when you were saying like, is Bon Appetit or Wishbone Kitchen bigger? I'm like, who's causing more of a conversation on the internet? Bon App when they had a scandal, but Wishbone Kitchen now.
Well, so basically what the cut did is, and we'll link the article so you can read it. They interviewed
We'll promote gossip. We'll promote toxic gossip for
you guys. So what I like about the cut is that they went and they talked to the people who run these subreddits.
That's cool. How do you think they got in touch? Did the people remain anonymous?
I think there's some sort of, I'm sure there's like some way to contact them through Reddit or like some sort of email address or something. I think a lot of them have obviously like a username that's not their name. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. But basically they went out and asked these people like, why do you do this? Because it's deranged, right? Again, the two influencers that are being targeted in the Paris one are not necessarily my favorite people in the world. Like, I'm not their audience, but I would never... In a million, like I've never.
Danny's starting shit on the pod.
What I'm saying is I'm not necessarily like their audience or someone who's like, love your girl, but I would I would never be like, did you see her double chin in the last story? Yeah. Like, that's such an insane thing to do.
Well, that's cruel. I also don't love comments on people's physical appearance.
They comment on everything, Gabby. Cruel. It's really crazy. There's like a million conspiracy theories. Did you see this? That means this. Did you see that? That means that. And it's just like...
People think he's like, people have... I want to know who's on the New York one. Oh, I'll get up.
We can check later. Yeah. But yeah, but they're deranged, first of all. If I was the influencer...
Well, it's like a hobby.
I would feel like shit. Yeah, it's like a hobby. Yeah. There's communities. So it's not just one moderator. There's like... dozens of them and people commenting. So every time they're like, what do you think about her outfit? She looks like shit. And then like 20 people are like, yeah, she looks like shit. And it's like, what the fuck is
like, what do you get out of it? That's what I want to know.
So basically they interviewed all these people. It's people from like all different like cities, walks of life, ages. And it's very interesting because I feel like the common denominator is like, they're a little bit jealous in some way. So one of them was like, I know how much they make because I work in marketing and it makes me sick. Basically saying like influencers make too much money. Another one said like, I don't think influencing is an actual job. So that's why I bully them,
right,
I guess.
Yeah.
So one of them was like, this is how I keep up with gossip, essentially. One of them was like a stay-at-home mom that has three kids. And I guess in between the lines, she's like, I'm bored, essentially.
God. Yeah.
And so to me, a lot of these people, like, I kind of understand to an extent what they're saying. But I'm like, that sounds like a you problem. Like, you need to go to therapy. It sounds
like
something,
like, when you notice it about yourself. Like, by the way, I think we all have these emotions. Yeah. You go to therapy, or guess what you do? You start a podcast.
The only one that I sort of get it, but it's still kind of crazy. It's like, one of them was like, oh, I met my favorite influencer in real life, and she was a bitch to me.
No, okay, I get that. It's a horrible... Did you see there's, like, a whole thing happening on TikTok because of this? Like, this girl met...
a thing?
I mean, I think this is the thing that happens a lot, but there's this one girl, I'm not going to say her name, but she's like kind of short hair fashion girl. And she like an influencer approached her on the street when she was filming a video of herself. And it was like made some like joke comment like, okay, cutie, go off. But like in a way that were like really condescending, like, way.
Yeah.
And she like ranted about it. And then all these other influencers like Teffy got involved and like made a comment. And, you know, I first of all felt better that like everyone gets treated like shit by everyone else. Like, it's not just people who have social standing, but.
Yeah, I mean, I
get how that's hurtful.
I get how, yeah, I get that too. But at the same time, I'm like, just because Listen, I met so many influencers in the course of my career because I've worked in social.
And you didn't become a Redditor, a snark
Redditor. I did not start a snark out at anyone, and I still think that's a deranged thing to do. But my whole thing is like, it's like meeting a celebrity. Like, they don't really owe you anything.
I agree
with that. It should be nice. It should be a nice, like, people should be nice in general. You shouldn't turn into, like, that shouldn't be your villain
origin story.
Like, that shouldn't be the reason why you become, like,
also
a
imagine
Redditor.
How hard it is. Okay, I don't know if you happened, like, you've run into this, but when I was first posting TikToks in Paris, I got approached all the time.
Oh, no, that never happened to me.
Oh, it's just so crazy because it was such a small world. And I just, like, all the time on the subway, in restaurants. It happened while I was with my family one time and it was mortifying. They were like, who are you fucking idiot, like, posting your face online? And I got to this point where I can't imagine being actually popular and famous because you just must have to be on all the time. Yes. Like, imagine the days I snap at people in the street. Like,
well,
just it's hard. It's probably really hard.
The other thing that people don't realize, because I've met a lot of influencers that are very outgoing and outspoken on social, and then you meet them in real life and they're actually super shy.
Yeah.
I think a lot of people don't realize that that's a persona they put on for the internet, and they're not actually that way in real life. Mm-hmm. And so when they kind of meet the person and maybe they're like a little more introverted or like shy or maybe not
they
as nice
that,
and
like,
bubbly,
probably
they
too.
Take that as, as an attack. And I think a lot of internet personalities, especially people who have been doing it for like so many years, they're not the same person online and offline. And that doesn't mean that's a bad thing or they're not genuine. That just means they put on a little bit of a persona, a little bit of a show to entertain their followers. And that's comfortable because they're looking at a camera. They're not looking at an audience. Mm-hmm. And when they're in public and someone approaches them, that might throw them off because they're just not the most social or outgoing. They're more like extroverted.
Do you think this is a problem or do you think this is just natural in terms of how people show up in spaces?
I think it's like there's a chance they're gonna be nice and you're headed off and maybe you can make a friend, and there's a chance they're gonna be assholes. And I don't think that should radicalize you to create a snark page about them. That's what I think. People are people. People can be nice. People can be mean. Mm-hmm. Don't expect anything from them because, like I said, they're not, they don't really owe you anything. Of course, if you're like a, if you're a loyal follower, it'll be nice to meet them and they're nice to you. I agree. But if they're not what you expected, I mean, I think that happens with celebrities all the time.
Oh my God. Yeah.
You never want to meet your heroes. Mm-hmm. And I think you just have to get over it. But I think
someday
in general,
we're going to talk about your story of when you hung out with the Jonas Brothers for a
night. Oh my God. I did sign an NDA. So
no way. Really?
I did.
Oh, sorry, can I even say that?
Yeah, you can say it. It's fine. Okay. I mean, they're not going to track me. Nothing happened. I don't have any gossip. They were actually super nice. But yeah, it was an interesting night. Anyway, what's yours?
Oh my gosh. Not as interesting as yours. Do you follow Gabby Windy? I don't know if it's Windy or Windy.
I don't know, but I just looked her up and I kind of vaguely know who she is because she's on Traitors this season.
Okay, once again, true form, I literally have not watched anything she's on. So I haven't watched The Bachelor and I haven't watched Traitors.
But she has like a podcast?
Don't even know that YouTube? Either. I just see clips
how
of her.
How is she? Yeah, where are the clips
There's
from?
Clips on her TikTok. She started popping up on my TikTok. I was like, who is this? She's a lesbian.
Okay.
So then I was kind of confused. I was like, how are you on The Bachelor? Do they have Lesbian Bachelor? I'm not sure. I can't watch The Bachelor. I get too bad secondhand embarrassment.
Was she The Bachelor?
Yes. I think there was
maybe
two.
Is she a lesbian or bi?
So she, like, people asked her how The Bachelor went and she was like, well, I'm a lesbian now. So I kind of like think she was maybe exploring.
Okay, so she wasn't out.
I thought there was like two. Oh my God. I've literally making out with this microphone. I thought there was like two Bachelors. You know what? I'm not even going to comment because I don't actually know the answer. I am just obsessed with her energy. I think I'm not alone. Obviously, The Cut just did an article
people
on her.
Love her.
Everyone's
yeah.
obsessed with her. Evan Ross Katz just had this like devoted post to her. But okay, so I have this mission this year, which we've talked about, which is just to own my weirdness and confidence and thoughts and just say the stuff I want to say this year. You know, I just feel like, I don't know, like being a woman in the world, being intimidated by men. I also like grew up in the Midwest, which is like self-deprecating. Yeah. I don't know what it is. I just have always been someone who's like every thought I have is stupid. Every feeling I have is stupid. And I watch her. And first of all, we share a name. We share a spelling. I mean, that's tangential, but, and I just, she's so weird and
she
expresses
funny.
Every thought in her head. Yeah. And so she articulates, her voice is so interesting. She kind of gives like Jennifer Coolidge, but like a young Jennifer
she
Coolidge.
She kind of looks like ditzy, but then she says something, you're like, oh, she's actually
but
funny.
She clearly like is funny and like thinks about things. And she says like really perceptive things, but in a very funny way. And she's just inspiring me to say, I don't know, lean into who I am more. Yeah, you know,
you should.
And I really like her, and I feel like this like warmth from her that I love, and I just
people love her.
Yeah, I mean, I get it though. She's just,
I've only seen a few clips, and I thought she was funny. Like, she gave me that same impression. Like, I was like, who is this girl? She kind of came off a little bit like airheaded, ditzy. Yes. But then when I actually finished the clip, I'm like, that was actually really funny.
Yes.
So it's just really interesting. It gives me like a more elevated Paris Hilton vibe.
Yeah, I mean, honestly, it's kind of Nicole Richie?
Yeah.
It's but kind of Nicole Richie vibes in.
True. I find her hilarious. Like, I think
Nicole Richie, they're so both funny. Very smart. Yeah, smart. Yeah. So they both like play dumb, I think.
Funnier than Paris, but I still like appreciate what Paris had to bring. Like,
I think she was Paris's enabler from what I saw.
She was Paris's enabler.
Like, she enabled her to like be kind of,
I think,
like
them
that.
Together were a great match.
We should rewatch that.
I know we should.
Yeah. And we're back for our final segment.
Snack and spiral. Spiral and snack.
Danny, what are you snacking on?
So my snack is a little more of a dessert, but that's you okay. can also snack on it. And it's from one of my favorite places in France. It's a place called Picard, and it's a frozen.
This is trending, by the way.
Is it?
I'm going to find you guys the article and link it in the show notes.
Yeah, it's a supermarket, a grocery store, but everything is frozen. And
is it cold inside?
No, not really. Everything's like in cooler.
I'm kind of picturing like normal. I'm kind of picturing like kind of like there's snow.
Have you been to Picard?
I've looked at it. I don't have I have like a freezer that's the size of like a brick.
Oh, that's true. Okay. Well, they have like everything. It's an incredible place. Everything is really good, honestly. I've tried a lot of their things. They also have themed weeks throughout the year. They have American Week, which is super funny.
We can probably link our friends.
Yeah, Sarah, our friend Sarah does. Yeah. She basically reviews it every year. It's really funny because I don't really think French people know what American food is, but it's really funny every year. They also have Latin Week, which is actually pretty solid. They do like empanadas and yuca fries and stuff like that. Everything
they do
frozen.
Yuca fries?
Yes, they do yuca
what
fries.
What the hell?
Yeah, and then they just recently had like Indian Week, and they had like frozen naans and stuff like that. So again, the variety is really good. They had like Mediterranean Week a few weeks ago, which is like mainly like, they had a lot of like Italian frozen things. They have a lot of frozen like soups and sauces that are really good.
Yum.
For when you're like, I don't know what to cook today. Just pop them out from the freezer and just use it. But my favorite thing they do is their desserts, specifically the mini cones, which is something that if you live in the US and you have a Trader Joe's in your city, you probably are familiar with the Trader Joe's mini cones.
Well, so I do have lived in the US, have had Trader Joe's in my cities, and today is the first time hearing about these.
They're pretty big, at least in my community. In the US.
What's the most you've ever eaten in one sitting?
Oh, I can eat like four or five.
Okay.
Or like the entire thing, which is like eight.
Yeah,
or
me
something.
Too. Okay. That was a test and you passed.
Oh, no. No shame. But basically, they sell a very similar, it's virtually the same thing. And it just kind of, when I saw them in Picard, I was like, is this what I think it is? And that's why I had it. And it's like basically.
Does it
the
taste
same
the same?
Thing. It's not exactly, but pretty much. Like, okay. It's the same kind of, it's just basically like a mini cone with the little triangle end of the cone is filled with chocolate.
Then best part. Oh my God.
Ice cream
it's
is vanilla
childhood.
And it's covered in chocolate. Oh. So it's pretty much the same thing.
Yeah.
They don't taste 100% the same, but they do it's pretty much the same thing.
Okay. But does it taste more natural? More
I can't remember. If I'm being completely honest with you, I can't remember.
Just do side by side. How are you ever going to get the frozen ones back
I'm
here,
never going to get that from Trader Joe's. It's going to melt. But anyway, it's a good, if you're missing that from Trader Joe's, or if you want to try it out, I highly recommend it. There are mini cones from Picard. They have chocolate version and they have vanilla version.
They have vanilla. Does the vanilla have white
chocolate?
The vanilla
is the one I had. The chocolate is
chocolate ice cream.
Okay, yeah, chocolate ice cream.
I want a white. I am a controversial figure in the sense that I actually love white chocolate. And don't tell me it's not real chocolate. I don't care. I think it's delicious. So I would, I can implore anyone out there, food innovators,
Picard,
create a Picard. Picard. Is it Picard or Picard?
I call it Picard. Oh, I never know because the other day I called, you know the store Normal? I called it Normal. And Tara, our friend, was like, what's Normal?
Really?
Yes. I was like, well, I'm
excuse
sorry.
Excuse me.
It's a
I'm
French
integrated
store.
Into French culture.
Yeah, but it's spelled Picard.
Okay.
It's Picard, yeah. I guess. you don't pronounce the D like everything in France. But it's a great, great supermarket if you're ever around.
And who do you hate slash want to rant about slash?
I want to rant about the coffee shop epidemic.
Oh, no.
It's specifically because, there's a fucking coffee shop popping up every 5 minutes in Paris.
Why is it happening? Like, because of immigration?
I think
are we the problem?
Are we the problem? I do think coffee or like to-go coffee is becoming a thing here more. Or like data coffee shops are becoming a thing here more. So I think that's probably it. But also I think coffee shops are not that expensive to run, because I don't think coffee is that expensive. And I might be completely wrong, but that's
what coffee prices are going up. I know this because I had a coffee client.
Oh, really? Well, that's what I've heard.
But maybe comparatively.
Comparative to like a restaurant, right, I think running a coffee shop, it's the overhead is not that crazy. Sure. However, all the coffee shops that are popping up in Paris have a huge issue. Number one is a lot of the times the coffee is not good. And a lot of the
I wouldn't
times,
know I'm trash, but I trust you on that.
Well, it's not that I'm like I don't know that much about coffee either. I drink latte, so it's not like I'm like drinking filtered coffee, but it's not good, the coffee. It's expensive as fuck, New York prices. Like the other day I paid $6.50 for a chai and I'm like, what is this?
It seems so normal to me, but it just must be.
I feel like that's a lot of money. I mean, maybe I'm like out of touch or something, but I just thought it was super expensive. And then the last problem is there's no fucking seating anywhere. Yeah. There's no cozy
little circle chairs that your butt doesn't even fit on.
Flat, like wooden stools that you sit for 30 minutes and your ass is hurting.
Killing you. Back is killing you.
You can't have a work session there because you're going to be so uncomfortable because there's no like, it's just not a good cozy setup for like, if you want to read a book or if you want to sit outside.
Do you think, I didn't think about this till now, but do you think it's like, you know, hostile design, like cities will design so that like homeless people can't sleep on furniture. Yeah. Do you think they're doing that so that we don't come with our laptops?
Yeah. I mean, of course I do think that for them, they don't want you to like set up shop
they don't make
with your
money
laptop.
When we're all sitting there, I guess.
Yeah. But then I'm like, but if I'm there reading a book or if I bring my laptop to answer emails or whatever, I'm there 2-3 hours, I'm probably going to get a pastry and a coffee. Same. And then maybe, so I'm going to spend more money than I would. Mm-hmm. If I'm going to get something
also,
to
the people
go.
Can come still in, like people can still come in, come and go.
Well, and that's the thing. Like now that I'm freelancing, like I work from home, but you know, sometimes I'm like, I just want to be outside, especially like now that the weather's getting nice. Yeah. Like it's like sunny in Paris. You want to be outside. And so I'm like, okay, let's meet at this coffee shop. And there's never seating. If there's seating, it's super uncomfortable. So you have like a meeting for an hour and you're like ready to come home. And so I think the problem is, it's not that they're popping up everywhere. Cause whatever, more coffee shops, that's not an issue. Is that the coffee isn't good. Mm-hmm. The product isn't good. It's expensive. And there's no coziness. You don't want to stick around. You don't want to hang out. You don't want to tell your friends, hey, let's have a coffee and talk about life for 3 hours.
No, it feels like you're always like on your toes, ready to go. Yeah. Like you're not ready. You're not settled.
And everything is like a countertop. So you have to stand or you have to sit in a stool. And when a person leaves, everybody's fighting over that one stool. You know, so it's like, so I just want coffee shop people to like create cozy spaces.
Yeah. Can I pitch you an idea?
Sure.
What do you think about, so I love terrasse culture. If you don't know, like, I mean, everyone who lives in Paris, I realize I call it the terrasse and everyone's like, what the hell are you talking about? Terrace?
Like outdoor.
Yes. Seating. It's like an outdoor seating, but it's a culture of every like brasserie here, everywhere has it. Even Tabac kind of have like sometimes places to sit outside. Tabac is where you get like an espresso at the bar or whatever. My pitch is a terrasse. With a good like a good coffee shop with a terrasse.
Yes.
Like why can't you merge the best of French culture, which is lounge at a terrasse, with good the products. Best of American Australian culture, which is like actually good coffee shops or / Italian culture or whatever. But like I don't know why you can't merge the two.
Yeah, I don't understand. There's some places that have come sort of close, like KB and then but even there, I mean their coffee is good, I will say. Very expensive. Like the chai there I think is €7. Very good chai. The ice one. I don't know what the hot one. Their pastry game, however, is weak.
Really?
And then when you bring a fucking croissant or like something from somewhere else.
They don't
like
you?
No. They're like, you can't eat it here.
No way. Really?
That happened to an American couple. The other day I was sitting there reading my book, minding my business, having my chai. And there was an American couple that came and they had kids and they had bought, you can tell they had bought croissants from the boulangerie next door. And then the little kids were like, okay, let's eat. And then the guy came and was like, you can't eat that here.
Or
you
in the outdoor seating?
Outside.
Oh, that's chaos.
And
that's
they
stupid.
Told them either you need to leave, like, do you want me to put your coffee to go? And they were like rightfully annoyed, but they respected it. So they put their croissants away. But then I'm like, why the fuck do you not sell croissants anymore?
Oh, they don't sell croissants?
No, they sell like banana bread and they sell like scones. Again, some of it is good. But yeah, sometimes I go there and I'm like, I don't really want to have dessert here because it's not the best of the best.
Yeah.
I'm just imploring... If there's a new coffee shop popping up in the 9th or anywhere,
do better.
In Paris,
do better.
Just give me seating. Give me good pastries. Yeah. Give me good coffee.
Yeah.
And that's how I'm saying.
Bada bing, bada boom.
What's your snack?
Oh my God. My snack is really indulgent this week. My snack is a piece of bread, a lot of butter, a thick layer of butter, demi-sel. That means partly salted. Could be fully salted if you want to go crazy. And then a layer of Conte. Conte is...
That's like the Frenchest thing I've heard.
Oh my God. The first guy I ever slept with here taught it to me. And it's the biggest thing I've taken from that quote unquote relationship is that one combo because I didn't know you could mix butter with cheese.
Yes.
Which is crazy because I'm from Wisconsin. So like you would have like, think we would have mixed in all the dairy.
My people's culture.
Oh my God. It's incredible. I made Danny try it.
It was really good. I really liked it. I mean, butter and cheese.
I know. I think it's probably really hard not to like, but yeah, I love it. Yeah. So anyway, that's my snack. I actually have it quite often when I feel like I have nothing in my fridge and I need something super quickly. I live across from a fromagerie and I go to the
forget how much I like comté cheese sometimes have it and I'm like, fuck, I should eat this more.
And I'll recommend, I love a 15 plus month aged. You can go up to almost 40. I think 36 might be the
when they like
oldest I've had.
They're so aged. They become even like spicy. They like
crystallize. Usually at Carrefour or Franprix you can get up to 15 months, and if you go to the fromagerie you can get much older. Today we had 15 month.
It's really good.
Which is pretty good. In terms of
what are you ranting about?
Oh my God, what aren't I ranting about?
Spiraling
these days. This one's shout out to my friend whose name starts with a J. I told her that I'd leave her anonymous, but I don't know why. But here is my rant, and it is people who lean against the pole in the subway/metro. You know, it is just absolutely the reason that I'm going to commit my first homicide. I probably shouldn't say that in public, but I cannot stand it. I was reminded in New York that for all New York's faults, and believe me, there are many.
There's
a lot of problems with the subway in New York right now. But people do have the baseline of subway etiquette.
There's etiquette for sure. Here, that's not a thing.
I don't know what happened in Paris that it didn't happen, but it is the same way that I have my bane of my existence being how people walk here. Like the fact that people don't let you out of the metro before you get on in Paris, like they just shove in before you're able to get out.
Yeah.
The pole thing is insane. Now, okay, if it's empty, there's no one there.
Of course.
You need to like send
on
an email.
That pole if you want.
Get you rub up on that pole. You're like, what's the bear in Jungle Book? The bare necessities.
Oh yeah, were you?
You go to town. If there is a full subway,
yeah.
Paris doesn't have what New York has, which is those railings down the middle. So you can like, I'm tall, so I can usually like get up there and hold that. There's nowhere to hang on.
No,
so you're
really
stumbling around, and some girl or guy is up on there,
sometimes I push them off.
Oh, but I like do this thing, which my friend does too, is like we put our hands behind it, then we like knuckle them. What do you do to push them off? What's your technique?
Well, same thing. I just put my hand.
Yeah.
And I usually do it near their, if it's a girl, near
their hair.
Mm. So they can feel it.
Smart. Whoa.
So they're like, no.
You guys
because,
should have seen Danny's eyes when she did that. It got dangerous.
No, because it's like, it's also like a weird intimate thing because it's like you're touching a stranger's hair.
Yeah, but you know what? They asked for it.
No, 100%. But it's even really weird for me because I'm like, I don't want to touch your disgusting hair.
No, but of course. Of course I don't want to touch their hair. But then what is the alternative?
Yes. I'm like, we're all squished in here. Come on.
There's nowhere to hold on. Otherwise I'm stumbling around. I'm bumping into people. I don't know what to do.
I feel like people are not very aware of their surroundings in public transportation in Paris in general. And we can have an entire podcast
on that.
But I think the pole thing is really annoying. And it's like, we are packed. It's fucking rush hour. Everyone is like standing up against each other. And you decide to, I hate when they put their butts.
No.
I'm like, why? Like, hello?
No.
And then another thing, which is annoying, but it's not as annoying as the pole thing, is like they don't take their like
backpack,
they have a bag.
Off,
they don't.
Or they don't
them
fold
off
up their scooters. Like people bring their scooters on and don't fold them up.
I want to fight.
No, but like
on
you,
scooter.
There's nowhere to stand. There's nowhere to sit. It's just like pure insanity.
Yeah. So I'm fully with you committing murder.
Okay.
Because of this.
Right.
So. Anyway.
Well, here we are at the end once again.
That's our episode. Yeah. It was a very food heavy episode,
which is good. I hope you guys are starving. I feel like we're gonna have a lot of strong thoughts on this.
I think
for some
there's
reason
just so many things we can cover with food. Today was restaurant culture, and I think grocery stores, markets, there's just like so many things we can cover.
Yeah, it's true.
But overall, any final thoughts around the food differences?
I'm very curious
if restaurant culture,
I'm curious if our New York subset is gonna have strong thoughts on my like hot takes on how New York is.
I think a lot of people will agree. I remember like when my friend Olga came to Paris for the first time, she did say like, she said something about the vibe, also being like, I prefer the vibe in New York restaurants, but I like the food in Paris better, or something like that. And I remember being like, that's so interesting. But I will say the last thing, up city that I think is a good middle in between the two cities.
I'm very curious.
Is London.
Oh, it is. Okay.
Only because I do think London has a lot of the creativity that New
York
has.
London kicks me out too, though. Huh? London's a very early.
They kick you out?
Yeah, they've kicked me out a couple of times.
That's never happened. Well, maybe I've just been.
All right, don't invalidate my experience.
No, I mean, in my experience, they want me to stay longer. No,
like, we hate your face.
No, but I will say, I don't remember service being as cutthroat, but I do remember the diversity and the food scene.
In London
is really cool. Yes. And the innovation. I remember I went to a cereal waste restaurant. Oh, we went together, actually, the one for Tara's birthday. It's everything with zero waste and very cool. And like, it's just like very cool food scene. Mm-hmm. Which of course, very traditional things as well. Not as expensive as New York. More expensive. Still expensive than Paris. Yeah, yeah, more expensive, but not as expensive as New mm-hmm, York. Mm-hmm. And I think it's a middle ground between the two, mm-hmm. where there's a lot of like the innovation, diversity that New York has. And then I think a lot of the European influences as well, where like,
it's true. I do think it's probably a merger. I'm so yeah. hesitant to say anything positive about London because my ex lived there and yeah. obviously just
But I think
just
you need
me.
To reclaim London.
I'm going, well, everyone knows, I'm going in 2 weeks.
Okay, great.
So I'll go, I'll report back.
Yeah.
And then we can do a little
Oh my God, recap. I need to send you all the places I've been saving. I need to go back to London because I think London has a great scene. Salad places, a million good salad places. Yeah. Like, there's just like a lot of things
lot of fast cash.
That I miss.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And also let us know if you guys feel like you have a city.
Yeah, what
if
do you
feel like
think?
An in-between city. Let me know if you feel like I'm totally wrong on New York with like New York thoughts, but cool. All right. Well, thanks guys.
Thank you.
Bye.
This was Clashes,
a podcast brought to you by two idiots.
Clearly. I don't know if I can laugh on cue.